On a cloudy day over the Rocky Mountains, this is Go West Young Podcast, the show all about America's parks and public lands. My name is Aaron Weiss at the Center for Western Priorities in Denver. Usually we start the show with a quick news roundup before bringing in our guests, but this week we are all news all the time. President Trump just signed an executive order that starts a 120-day review of national monument designations made by previous presidents going back 21 years. That time frame is not an accident. It's bookended by two monuments in Utah, Grand Staircase Escalante, protected by President Clinton in 1996, and Bear's Ears, protected by President Obama late last year. Joining me to talk about all of this, two people who had a front row seat to President Obama's conservation work. Christy Goldfuss, she was the managing director of the White House Council on Environmental Quality, and Kate Kelly, she was the senior advisor to Interior Secretary Sally Jewell. Christy and Kate are both now at the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C., which is where they join us now. Thanks to both of you for taking the time during a very busy week, I know.
Thank you for having us, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Christy, let me start with you. What was your reaction when you heard about this review of national monuments?
I have to admit, at first, I was really disappointed and sad. The decades of work that really culminated in a historic legacy for President Obama around the protections that he made over the course of his administration was such a high point and such a legacy that we are all so proud of. And to know that they were going to open this up and really question all the local support and all the engagement that was done around these was disappointing. But that quickly turned to anger and a real sense of optimism around our ability to get those voices loud again and show just how much support there is for all the places that were protected by President Obama. And then long before that, the Bush administration, and prior to that, the Clinton administration, we know people love these places.
Kate, there was quite a bit of difference between how Secretary Zinke talked about the review on Tuesday and then how President Trump talked about it when he actually signed it on Wednesday. Do you think, based on that there's any chance this could be a serious review, or do you think the executive summary's already written?
Yeah, sure. I think we heard Zinke talk about this as a review that he had made no decisions, that he was going to go out and listen to people, and he had no predetermined outcomes. And then by the time Trump signed the order, he was pretty bullish in his remarks, talking about the need to return the power to the people and to return the federal land grab or turn it over. So I think there's kind of two things with that. The first is it's not very clear that President Trump understands what a national monument is, that in fact, national monuments already were public lands to begin with, and what we're talking about now is what level of protection they receive. And the second point is that it seems like this review is potentially nothing more than kabuki theater, that they have a end goal in mind to eliminate or shrink national monuments that are now woven into the fabric of communities. Bear's Ears National Monument and Grand Staircase, they called out directly, but they've also named about two dozen other national monuments in the 100,000-acre range that they are going to take a close look at. And then more importantly, they've also indicated that they are open to looking at any monument after 1996 where Secretary Zinke deems that there wasn't enough public input. And that leaves him wide discretion and really puts a huge swath of monuments at risk, including our cultural and historic monuments like Stonewall, like the civil rights monuments that President Obama designated in Birmingham, and incredible monuments that help power economies and mean a lot to local communities. So, this is an incredibly concerning review and should be concerning to really all Americans who care about their public lands, their waters, national monuments.
I think that brings up Katahdin Woods and Waters in Maine and the fact that you mentioned all these cultural monuments as well. The text of the executive order seems to say that they were only going to look at monuments larger than 100,000 acres, but then you had Maine Governor Paul LePage standing there next to the president, and Katahdin is definitely less than 100,000 acres. So, I mean, is that a sign the administration really is going after more monuments than they claim?
Well, Aaron, I think they need to clarify what they're doing here. I mean, that discrepancy from what we heard from Secretary Zinke and then what the executive order actually says is concerning. What are they talking about? 45 days or 120 days is not enough time to do a rigorous review of the places that they've indicated. But then in addition to that, yes, Governor LePage was on the dais with the president. So that would indicate that they're open to looking at Katahdin Woods, yet Katahdin Woods is and Woods and Waters is not on the list that the White House put out there. So I really think the burden is on them to tell us what are they doing, what is included in this review, and what criteria are they using when they say sufficient public engagement. What is that? We need more information from them on what's happening here.
So much of this coverage is rightfully centered around bear's ears because we've seen the Utah delegation determined to get rid of it. I want to go back to how bear's ears came to be. Christy, you were really involved in that, and this was not a short process, was it?
No, and we've seen really incredible reporting from the newspaper outlets in Utah about the truth here. This was a multi-year process, and we in the White House worked closely with the Utah delegation as we came to the end of the administration. Kate's old boss, Secretary Jewell, made very clear in all of her discussions with the governor and with the delegation that there was such support for protecting this area, for protecting bear's ears, and really pointed out the historic nature of the five tribes coming together and saying that this was an important cultural and historic site for them, that it was going to be protected either way, that she felt strongly and that working with the president, they were going to figure out either the legislation that the delegation put forward would go through Congress, or we were going to use the power of the president to protect the place. And given all the outreach that was done around the Public Lands Initiative, and then months and months of discussion with the delegation and the governor's office and Sally's really robust five-day trip to the region, we left no stone unturned in terms of what the designation should look like, what stakeholders wanted, the information that they provided during the PLI process. The boundaries that the president ultimately chose mirror very closely to the legislation that took 2 years for Rob Bishop to put together, Congressman Rob Bishop. So, I mean, the idea that this was like an end of days, last minute, behind closed doors designation is just not true. And the delegation knows that. They came in to meet with us at the White House multiple times. Our staff met together for extensive periods of times. House Natural Resources put out a full review of documents that shows that that is all true. So, you know, it is disappointing that even after all these years since Grand Staircase Escalante, even after the economic success for the community of that national monument, that we're at this point where really the delegation is being dishonest with their state about the support for Bear's Ears. And I think that's going to come out and really be strong when Secretary Zinke goes himself to speak to constituents and speak to the stakeholders there. He will find that they've been having this conversation for a long time and that there is widespread support there for the designation.
Well, I would just add that when we talk about the effort to protect bear's ears, I think you can take it all the way back to maps dating in the early part of like the 21st century. But this has been a many, many decade long effort to make this happen, that this is the culmination of years and years of work, not just the past couple of years.
And you mentioned the PLI, where the monument boundaries eventually were 90% similar to what was in the PLI. Was that bill never made it, it got out of committee, never made it to the House floor, much less the Senate. Christy, was there anything in that bill that you think would have triggered a veto threat from President Obama, or was he ready to work along with the delegation?
We tried to work closely with the delegation, and there was lots of technical recommendations made to the delegation in terms of what we would need to see for that bill to move forward. We said honestly to them on several occasions that, of course, the first best case would have been for the bill to move and the president to sign Wilderness in Utah. That would have been hugely historic, and we were trying to get to that stage. But it was clear that there were, you know, several policies in there that we were not going to be able to live with, opening up areas and prescribing oil and gas development in areas that are now have certain levels of conservation status. And there a long list of changes that need to be made. And Congressman Bishop, in one of the final hearings, made it very clear that he was not interested in making any more changes to the bill. So, you know, we never got to the point of discussing a veto threat, but we made very clear that we were not in a position to be able to support the legislation that he was moving to the House floor. And then, honestly, he was not even able to get it out of the House. So any indication that the bill, if we had just given them a little more time, would have passed is just false. We gave them as much time to move that bill as possible. And then when they were unsuccessful in even getting it out of the House, it was clear that the president was going to support the tribal effort and support a designation.
There are some other monuments threatened by this executive order, like Basin and Range in Nevada, Oregon Mountains, Desert Peaks in New Mexico. Kate, was there a similar process that led up to all of those designations?
Absolutely. Secretary Jewell and before her, Secretary Salazar, made a great point of engaging with local communities in any of these decisions. All of these monuments happened because they started with grassroots organizing that said, this place is important to me. This land means something to my family. We would like to see this protected for our businesses, but also for future generations so we can pass it on. And so this was, from the beginning, a listening exercise that resulted in national monuments. In each one of the national monuments, Secretary Jewell and Secretary Salazar and many other officials would go out and have public meetings with anybody, really, was invited to come to these where we would hear from young people, from ranchers, from businesses, from teachers, from families about what the lands meant and what they wanted to see done with them. And it was a conversation. Oftentimes people are saying, you know, I rely on this land for subsistence use. And so I want to make sure that if there's a monument that I can continue to have that ability. It was talking with ranchers about grazing rights or access to hunting and making sure that as we establish a monument, if we establish a monument, that it made sense with the community and their needs and their wants. And so this has been a collaborative process in each case.
So let's say the review comes back in 120 days or 45 days in the case of Bears Ears, as Secretary Zinke is saying. If this comes back the way it sounds like it will, and the president then tries to erase or shrink a bunch of monuments, what happens then?
We will immediately be in court. It is illegal to shrink the boundaries of national monuments. And we won't get into the long congressional record and all the statutes that make the case for that. But any large-scale change to the boundaries of existing monuments will immediately end up in court. If they were to go even farther and throw out any national monuments, clearly that's illegal as well. And all of those decisions will end up in court.
I'll just say for folks who are listening, if this is your first time on the podcast, go back a couple episodes in your feed. We spoke to a law professor, Mark Squillaci, who is the expert on Antiquities Act law about three episodes or so ago. So he does dive into that. So if you really want to get into the legal weeds, that's a good conversation there. Kate, is there any way when you were at Interior you could have, the department could have done a legitimate, serious review of 25 monument designations in 120 days?
I think I'm just going to laugh, actually, in response.
Well, how long did it take to prepare Sally's trip? I mean, that trip was months in the making.
That's right. When Sally went to Bears Ears she went for 5 days, and that was a lot of time spent on the ground, meeting with people, but also just seeing the incredible antiquities, the rock art, the dwellings that have been there for thousands of years, meeting with the tribes, having coffee with people, sitting down for a meal, and really getting to understand what the issues are there. So that's what a conversation looks like. That's what listening to the public looks like. And I just am having a hard time understanding how they could do something that is truly honest and transparent and engaging in the time frame that they laid out.
Of all the monuments that both of you worked on, do either of you have a favorite monument or a favorite moment that you are particularly proud of?
Well, I will certainly never, ever forget traveling with the president to Midway Island in the middle of Papahanao Mokuakea. Yes, I can say that 3 times fast, and had to learn how to say it 3 times fast to help the president learn how to say it. But that was a truly amazing experience, to travel to Midway, to swim in an area so untouched by human activity, to see the monk seals really unfazed by humans because they have no idea who we are or what we're doing there. There are people who live on the island, but it's very remote. And the fish and coral and the incredible area of Papahanao Mokuakea, it was just an amazing experience for me.
I don't have a trip with the president to follow up with, but my favorite monument is Organ Mountains Desert Peaks. I got to travel there and do some hiking on the Organ Mountains side of it, and it is stunning. And we were walking along and ran into a tarantula. And so I thought, this is
memorable.
This is the Wild West. We're out here. But then on the next bend, we ran into petroglyphs that were along the walls there. And it was just a pretty great, it captured what we were protecting, was so many stories and this wildlife. I mean, I could probably do without the tarantula, but and then the other part that's neat about it is that our guides were Senator Heinrich and Senator Udall, who had spent so much of their lives advocating to protect places like this, and they were representing many New Mexicans on this hike and saying this is what would be good for our state, and they continue to be huge champions for not only that national monument, but so many public lands in New Mexico and across the nation. So this is really an effort that has a ton of champions, and they're all going to be, I think, on alert and speaking out, and we're going to hear a lot from them in the coming days, weeks, and months.
I grew up in Tucson. I can tell you tarantulas are really pretty friendly. It's it's the Gila monsters you have to worry about. Christy, I just want to go back for 1 second there. I just want to confirm that you helped teach our president, who was born in Hawaii and vacationed in Hawaii, how to pronounce Papahanao Mokuakea?
No, let me put it this way. I was prepared to do so if I needed to do so, and was asked by folks to be on alert in case he had that last-minute question. I will tell you, I did not get the opportunity to tell him how to say it, and he ended up just not saying it. Was the way he handled it.
Thank you for that clarification. Christy Goldfuss was the Managing Director of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. Kate Kelly was a Senior Advisor to Interior Secretary Sally Jewell. Thanks to both of you so much for joining the podcast on very short notice.
Thanks, Aaron.
We always leave you with a look back at this week in Western history. This week, it's a pioneer who hasn't gotten the recognition he deserves. James Pearson Beckworth, born this week in 1798, or possibly 1800. He was born into slavery, the son of a slave and her owner. His father, also his master, freed him. He moved west, joining a fur trapping expedition to the Rockies in 1824. He spent years as a trapper in Wyoming's Powder River Basin. At one point, he claimed to have been captured by the Crow Indians. According to his account, he was mistaken for the lost son of a Crow chief, so he was admitted to the Crow Nation. Other accounts suggest that is a little too romantic, and his stay with the Crow may have been planned by the Rocky Mountain Fur Company to help its trade with the tribe. Regardless, Beckworth married the daughter of a Crow chief and lived with the tribe for 8 or 9 years. He may have also double-crossed his employer, selling his furs to the competing American Fur Company, which was owned by John Jacob Astor. After that, his adventures took him to the U.S. Army, in the Second Seminole War in Florida, then on to trading on the old Spanish trail that led from the Arkansas River to California. In 1850, he discovered what is now called Beckworth Pass, a route through the Sierra Nevada mountains. He developed that into the Beckworth Trail, which let settlers and gold miners avoid 150 miles of dangerous travel, including the infamous Donner Pass. You can still find the town of Beckworth, California, population 432. He later settled in Denver as a shopkeeper and a civilian scout for military operations. He had some role in the infamous Sand Creek Massacre of 1864, although historians disagree about how much he knew about it. The circumstances of his life and death after that are less clear. He may have returned to live with the Crow after Sand Creek. He died in 1866 or 67, possibly laid to rest in the Crow tradition on a tree platform. James Beckworth, born this week in 1798, give or take a few years. That is it for this episode of Go West Young Podcast. We will, of course, keep you posted on the executive order targeting national monuments. We've got a map showing everything that's at risk, a bunch of articles on our website as well, westernpriorities.org, as well as our new campaign, monumentstoamerica.org. Now is the time to please share those around, let your friends know. This is about to get very important over the next 120 days. Thanks again to our guests, Christy Goldfuss and Kate Kelly. We will be back next week talking to Montana Senator John Tester. On behalf of all of us at the Center for Western Priorities, my name is Aaron Weiss, and thanks for listening.